At the outset, nothing in this podcast should be interpreted as legal advice. Further, the views or opinions expressed in this podcast do not represent those of the university. Please email Campbell Law Reporter at email.campbell.edu for any media inquiries and third-party distributions. Welcome to the Campbell Law Reporter podcast. This legal podcast strives to expand Campbell University's mission to lead with purpose by reporting with purpose. We hope to breathe new life into the dusty reporters on the shelves by reporting the content through captivating discussions. Our mission is to provide current and interesting reporting on legal topics affecting today's professionals. Listeners can expect to hear from various hosts throughout the year.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Campbell Law Reporter podcast. My name is Brian Hedrick. Today we're joined by another Campbell Law student, a rising 3L, who's also the author of the book Deer Hunting with Hounds, A Southern Tradition, Austin Tomlin. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Brian, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm awesome. Thanks for joining us. So obviously I know you. We've been in class together. We're on mock trial team together. I know you. But for people who don't, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm from Southeast Virginia. I went to Hampton Sydney College, graduated with a philosophy degree, and now I'm a rising 3L at Campbell University and hope to come back to Virginia and practice law in May.
So a lot of people listening to this may know, and we both know, being in law school is a lot and is busy, especially in your 2L into 3L year. So what motivated you to write this book? What was your why behind doing it, especially during such a busy time?
Well, I've always loved writing. I entered a few short story contests when I was an undergraduate, and that's really where I learned that I enjoyed writing. And I've always enjoyed hunting. So I kind of combined those two interests and came up with this book idea. But the main reason I wrote this book is because there's never been a book written about deer hunting with hounds. And there's a lot of common misconceptions out there. There's a lot of people that talk about it in negative ways, but they've never done it. And there's just not much out there that describes deer hunting with dogs or dog hunting in depth and provides people with an explanation of the complexities around it. So I wanted to give people who have never dog hunted, who have maybe only done it once or twice, something that they could pick up and read and understand the tradition in a way that I have doing it for so long. Because, I mean, if you type in dog hunting online, what you find is one or two sentences that describe it in a short, very uncharitable way. So I wanted to provide readers with an in-depth explanation, and I wanted to talk about some of the issues that people have with it. So that's really the point of this book, and I've always loved writing. So it was pretty easy for me. I mean, during the school year, it would be tough to do. I didn't work on it much last year, but this summer I really buckled down and finished it out.
So. You mentioned how there's not a lot on this topic. You're one of the first ones to really break ground on it and how complex it can be. But one of the things that I like most about this book, because, you know, I didn't spend that much time reading it. It was a really quick, easy kind of read, but it had a lot of information in it. I mean, I think it was like 2 to 3 hours. I mean,
yeah, it's only 115 pages. It's a short book.
Yeah, it was really easy to read. I mean, but it had a lot of important information, but it was quicker to read than like watching Avengers Endgame. So if you can do that, you can read this book also. But what I really liked about it is how simplified you made it and how you covered the background of it and painted a picture of what it's really like to deer hunt. So I'm somebody who's never done it, but I can understand your perspective coming from it. I like that you laid that background. One of the stories you talked about was the first time you killed a deer. You said you were 6 years old. If you could talk about that story a little bit more, and when you told that story in the book, you kind of explained what exactly deer hunting is. If you could explain that too, just for somebody who may not have done it.
Yes, I killed my first deer when I was 6 years old. It was a small buck. I killed it with a 410 over and under shotgun in Isle-of-Wight, Virginia, on a farm that no longer allows dog hunting, unfortunately. So, but it's a very memorable moment for me in my life. It was being ran by my dad's dogs. We were both sitting on a log when they started coming towards us. And I mean, I can remember it like yesterday. There wasn't too much to it, you know. The deer came by, I shot it, it ran in the woods. I thought I missed. We went in there and looked, and I was wrong. And but the best part about that was I was with my dad, and it was my dad's dog. So it's my first deer. So it's something that I'll never forget, even though it wasn't anything crazy, you know. But deer hunting with dogs, it's to get into more of an explanation of how a very basic explanation of that. It's different from other types of deer hunts because it's a communal activity. See, most deer hunting is done by yourself. You go get in a tree stand, you sit there for a few hours, and you might kill a deer, you might not. But dog hunting is a communal activity. So, and there's two people that make up a dog hunt. You got standers and houndsmen. Houndsmen, they're the ones who take care of the dogs. They're the ones who raise them, train them, take care of them, bring them to the hunt. And the standers are the part of the hunt that they don't own the dogs. They're not in charge of them. And we usually meet at a hunt club. Most dog hunters, they meet at a hunt club every morning, and we organize the hunt. We might hunt 1,000 acres. We usually hunt no less than 500 acres at the very least, but it's usually 1,000 or more. And say we have 20 standers and 3 houndsmen, or dog drivers, as some people call them. We'll figure out where the best places are that the deer cross, where they cross usually, and we'll put those standers in those areas, which that might be the backside of a field, might be a swamp bottom, might be a strip of tall trees that runs through a cutover. You really learn where the deer cross from experience. You know, we've hunted some of these pieces of woods. Some of these clubs have hunted the same blocks of woods for 75 years plus. You know, so I mean, you get to a point where you know where most of the deer are going to cross at, but then again, they can surprise you sometimes. And then the houndsmen, they figure out where they're going to turn out dogs. You know, so if we're hunting 1,000-acre square block, well, not all 3 houndsmen will turn out in the same spot. They'll spread out, turn out dogs, and then it's up to the dogs. They start hunting. And the dogs, they're not barking at first when you turn them out. But once they get on the scent of a deer, they start barking. And if not very much, it's just they'll bark every now and then, and they'll start trailing the deer. And then once they jump the deer out of its bed and it becomes a really fresh scent, they start barking almost every breath. That's when you know that the dogs are on a deer and the standers need to get ready. And then if we're lucky, one of those deer runs past a stander or a houndsman and they get a shot, and we get to eat venison that night. But more often than not, we don't get a shot. We're just catching dogs. But then after the hunt, we always go back to the hunt club. We skin the deer, and a lot of times we'll cook some of the deer that we killed that day, that night, fried up and have a good night. But that's the fun part about dog hunting is that it's a communal activity. You know, it's always fun. Even if we don't kill something, we're having a good time. We're out there enjoying ourselves. And it's really great for kids. You know, you see a lot of kids dog hunting because it's something that they can do before they can even shoot a gun. You can take a person dog hunting, and it's not quite as stressful for a young kid as, say, sitting in a tree stand for 8 hours. It's not as boring to them, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's a very basic explanation of deer hunting with hounds. I go much more in-depth in the book, and it's a little harder for me to describe it orally than when I'm writing, but I hope that sheds some light on it. Yeah, I highly recommend the book if you want to go in-depth on it. The first chapter, I talk about from when you get to the hunt club in the morning, organizing the hunt, how that's done, to turning the dogs out all the way until you harvest the deer. How do we catch the dogs? How do we maintain those dogs? And what happens after the hunt? You know, so if you want to know a lot more about it, I suggest reading the book for sure.
Yeah, and I'll back that up. I'll double down on it. Is that I'm somebody, like I've said, and you know this, I have never hunted before, probably never will. But reading that book, so I had no background knowledge. Reading that book, I felt it was the type of thing, if you had a lot of background knowledge, you're probably going to get a lot from it. If you're somebody like me who had no knowledge, you're still going to get a lot from it. So it was written in a way that anybody could really work with it. And the way you wrote it was interesting to me, because before reading it, I assumed it would probably be like, you know, the traditional debate of like, well, hunting versus non-hunting. It wasn't exactly that. It was really kind of explaining two different types of hunting, what you called still hunting and dog hunting. So if you could kind of explain what those two sides are and why there's a debate that exists between those two sides.
Yeah, well, for the people who don't who don't hunt and are listening to this, steel hunting is what most people think of when they think of hunting. You know, getting in a tree stand or sitting on a field's edge, you're just sitting there and waiting. You know, just being patient and waiting. And I steel hunt. I mean, most dog hunters I know steel hunt. But there's a big debate in the 9 states that still allow dog hunting. There's only 9. Between these steel hunters, people who don't hunt with dogs, and dog hunters. Basically, there's quite a few issues that I discuss in the book that steel hunters have with dog hunting. One of them being they think it's unethical. They think it's not fair chase. They think it violates property rights. They think it's impractical, you know, and all these issues fuel that debate. And a lot of it comes from, a lot of these issues that people have with it come from people just not being knowledgeable enough about the topic. People that have never been dog hunting before, they think it's unethical. Well, how can you claim it's unethical if you've never been dog hunting before? So that's really what I hope to get across with this book, is I hope people who have never dog hunted or have done it once or twice who have experienced bad apples in the sport will pick up this book and read it and see and read about dog hunting from an ethical dog hunter's perspective and hopefully have a more charitable view of it. The debate is really what fueled this book. I wanted to try to dispel some of the misconceptions that people have, especially when it comes to ethics, fair chase. I mean, those concepts, people love throwing out those concepts when they're talking about dog hunting.
Let's get into a little bit of those topics, because that's, you know, the law of the book, which I think after you describe kind of what it is and your background in it, you do a really good job, again, of explaining what the law is in a way that really anyone could understand what you're talking about. Before we get into the ethics and fair chase, we'll talk about that. Before we get there, you mentioned that only 9 states are still allowing this type of hunting. What are those 9 states, or at least some of those big 9 states that stand out in your mind? And why has that number been decreasing? Do you expect that number to continue decreasing?
Yeah, so all 9 of the states are in the Southeast. You know, Virginia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Mississippi, Alabama, just to name a few. And they're all Southeastern states that still allow it. An interesting fact, though, is that California and Hawaii have not banned deer hunting with dogs. The only problem with that is there's no white-tailed deer in California or Hawaii, so they're really irrelevant. So if you get technical, there's 11 states that still allow it, but really only 9 that where it's possible. But and it hasn't there hasn't been a state recently that's banned deer hunting with dogs completely. I think the most recent state to ban it was Texas in 1990. States have been banning it for the last 150 years. The first state to ban deer hunting with dogs was Wisconsin in 1876. And then by the 1920s, I think almost every state above Virginia, all the northeastern states had banned deer hunting with dogs. So it's something that's been slowly going away for a long time. Luckily, in the last almost 35 years, we haven't had a state outlaw it, but there's plenty of counties within states such as Georgia and Alabama that are getting rid of it county by county. It's not that they're necessarily decreasing right now. There's just a potential for these few states that still allow it to have it outlawed. If people like myself, who are ethical, law-abiding hunters, don't step up and try to explain what it is we enjoy doing. So many people just don't understand it. That want it banned, and they want something banned that they've never done. They just don't completely understand. So I hope this book provides them with that understanding. You know?
Right. And in talking about that in the book and a little bit earlier in this podcast episode, you mentioned 2 concepts, ethics being the first and this thing called fair chase being the second. So we'll just take those one at a time. Ethics. In the book, you list 6 principles of ethics. I just want to talk about the first one. You talked about laws and regulations. Talk a little bit more about that as it relates to ethics. What are some of the laws and regulations surrounding this type of hunting?
I'll get into the laws, but first, I mean, I want to point on that, why that's even an issue. So people claim that dog hunting is unethical. But the problem with that is when people say that, they never give us a definition of ethics. They never explain why it's unethical in their views. So I felt like it was necessary to provide a definition of ethics in this book that could be used, because if they say dog hunting is unethical, but other forms of deer hunting is unethical, well, what's your definition of ethics, and how does dog hunting not fit into that definition?
Right.
So I define ethics as a set of principles or values used to guide one's life. You know, other people might define it in a different way, That's how I define ethics. And from that, we need to come up with principles and values that support that ethic. And I pulled six principles from a magazine article from Deer and Deer Hunting magazine, which is a very popular deer hunting magazine. And I use a concept called the deer hunter's ethics. So these six principles, in my opinion, are the deer hunter's ethics. The first one that you mentioned being follow the laws and regulations. If you want to be an ethical deer hunter, you have to follow the laws and regulations. That's something that I think all hunters can agree on. I think that's something that most people can agree on in any aspect of society. But the question then is, can dog hunters follow the laws and regulations and successfully dog hunt, and do they? And my answer is yes. You know, many people claim that dog hunters violate laws and regulations all the time. Yeah, you know? But if you look at, I did Freedom of Information Act requests on all 9 states that still allow deer hunt with dogs, just to try to get some data. I asked them, how many hunting violations have you had in the last 5 years, and how many of those were related to deer hunting with hounds? And the number of violations that is related to deer hunting with hounds is extremely small. So that data alone shows, I mean, and for example, in Georgia and South Carolina, if you combine all the violations together and determine which ones are related to deer hunting with hounds, that number only comes up to 0.5% of the total violations. So the number of violations related to hound hunting is extremely small in at least South Carolina and Georgia. So I use that to support my argument that I think dog hunters follow the laws and regulations just as much, if not more, than any other type of deer hunter. Some of the things that people complain about are, they say dog drivers are turning out dogs on their property. And I'm sure that happens. You know, I've never seen it. Any hunting club I've ever been a part of has never condoned that type of activity. And I'm sure it happens every now and then, but those are the bad apples that are going to ruin it for everybody. You know, those people who are dumping dogs on people's property or driving up and down the roads, shooting on roads, that's something that people complain about. In my experience, the majority of dog hunters just don't do that, don't break the law in the way that many people against dog hunting think we do. I'm sure there's bad apples everywhere, and I'm sure the people that have had those one or two experiences with those bad apples, it's hard for them to get over it. But based on my research and my experience, dog hunters follow the laws and regulations just as much as any deer hunter. And that's the point I wanted to try to get across in that section of the book, because I think following the laws and regulations is one of the most important principles of the deer hunter's ethics.
And in that book, again, knowing you, I know that you say things in funny ways sometimes, and this quote seemed funny to me in the book, and I wanted to see, have you explain a little bit more. When you talk about ethics, this is a quote from the book, and it made me laugh a little bit. How is deer hunting with hounds unethical, but sitting around a pile of corn isn't? What do you mean by that?
So people claim that it's unethical, and it's not. This point kind of goes more to fair chase in that, so fair chase is the ethical, sportsmanlike, and lawful pursuit and taking of any free-ranging wild game animal in a manner that does not give the hunter an improper or unfair advantage. So in the book, I focus on the second half of that definition, which is that does not give the hunter an improper or unfair advantage. And so, for example, many hunters think that sitting over a pile of corn, like you said, like from that quote there, doesn't give a hunter an unfair advantage. But they think dog hunters do have an unfair advantage when they use a dog to hunt deer. So I try to make the point with a sentence like that, that how can you claim that dog hunting, when we're just using dogs, is unethical or fair chase or any more advantageous than the tools and technology that other hunters use? I mean, there's hunters out here now that they're using scent control, they're sitting over a man-made food plot with a rifle that can shoot 500 yards, you know, they have trail cameras, thermosails, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that stuff, but I'm just pointing out the hypocrisy with saying that using dogs is an unfair tool that gives hunters an unfair advantage, when many of the hunters that make those statements are sitting in man-made food plots or sitting over a pile of corn that they bought for $10 at Walmart last week. You know, they're using tools that are making it just as unfair for the deer as dog hunters are. So I tried to make a point with that quote, and I hope it came across to you and whoever else has read the book. But that's basically the point I was trying to make with that.
Okay, got you. Yeah, I didn't know what it meant. It seemed like a cool quote to me. I wanted to say it.
Yeah,
you also talk a lot about property law concerns. Specifically, the one you mentioned the most was Virginia's right to retrieve law. What's that law?
This is the most contentious topic in dog hunting in Virginia, for sure. So the right to retrieve law, it was passed in 1936, I believe, in Virginia. And it gives hunters the right to go onto another person's property without their permission to retrieve their hunting dog. And you can't drive on it. You have to walk on their property. You can't take a weapon. And as soon as you get the dog, you have to turn around and get off the property, leave as quickly as possible. And if the landowner approaches you and asks for your identification, you have to give it to them. If you don't, that's a misdemeanor. But many people have a serious problem with this law. They think it's unconstitutional. They think it violates their property rights, their right to exclude people from property. But this isn't, Virginia's not the only state with a law like this. It's interesting to know that Minnesota, a state that doesn't allow any deer hunting with dogs, but I'm sure they have bear hunters, coon hunters, coyote hunters, they also have a right to retrieve law. It's almost identical to Virginia's law. And a court hasn't ruled that it's unconstitutional. Many people have a problem with this, but I think there's two benefits to the right to retrieve law that a lot of anti-dog hunters don't quite grasp. And it's hard to grasp the first one, which is the benefit to the dog hunters. You know, the benefit to the dog hunters is that with the right to retrieve law, they have the ability to get their dogs off the property as quickly as possible and ensure their safety and protection. Because every now and then, a dog will get stuck. They'll get in a swamp. Maybe they get lost. They're a young puppy. They don't know where to go, so they just stand still. Sometimes a dog will get injured, and it can't really go very far. It's important to have something like the right to retrieve law where hunters can go in there and get their dog out safely, make sure it's okay, and just get it off the land as quickly as possible, which brings me to my second point. I think it's also a benefit to the landowners who don't like the law because they don't want dogs on their property. So this law allows hunters to go on the property and get the dog off as quickly as possible. If they couldn't, the dog would be stuck on there. And many of those landowners who don't like dog hunting that I've experienced in the past would not allow you to go back there and get your dog. You just have to wait. That's how it is in Carolina. That's how it is in all these other states that dog hunt. If you got a dog on somebody's property and they won't give you permission, that dog could be hurt. I mean, it could be wounded. It could just be stuck on a log in the middle of a swamp. We don't know. But in every state except for Virginia, you can't get to it. And it's an important law for Virginia, and it's something that people have been trying to reverse for a long time now.
Another concept you mentioned is looking at it from kind of the animal's point of view. You mentioned two different animals here, deer and the hound or the dog themselves. So you say there are some misconceptions regarding the health of the deer. If you could explain that a little bit. And another part that you explain also, I'm combining these two questions here. Another part you explain in the book is the relationship between the hunter and the dog. So if you could kind of talk about the deer and kind of talk about the dog.
Yeah, I'll touch on the health concerns for the deer first. So a lot of people think that dogs chasing a deer has substantial health effects or behavior effects on a deer. And the little research that has been done, and I mean little, there hasn't been a whole lot of studies on deer hunting with dogs, but there has been a few over the years. This little amount of research that I've found shows that dogs have little to no effect on a deer's health. One of the common concerns is that dogs either catch and kill the deer, or if they don't catch and kill the deer, they cause substantial health effects that last long term to the deer. And the research just shows that not to be true. I mean, in my experience, we very rarely catch a deer. And if we do catch a deer, if the dogs catch a deer, it's usually because the deer is already wounded, already injured in some way, is very old and weak, or has some other kind of physiological problem, but we very rarely catch the deer. So, I mean, based on my experience, it's easy for me to argue against that one point, but I don't know. I didn't, prior to this book, I didn't know much about the health, how it harmed a deer's health in the long term if they weren't killed or caught by dogs. And what little research that has been done shows that it doesn't harm them at all. There's been, so chronic stress and fatal myopathy are two things that I talk about in the book, and those are two concerns that people have for white-tailed deer. And there's been no studies that show any chronic stress or fatal myopathy within a white-tailed deer that's been chased with hounds. And there's nothing out there in my experience or in the few studies that have been done that show that there's any substantial harm done to a deer's health after being chased with dogs. And then the second issue I talk about that in that chapter of the book is more of a behavior concern. People think that when a deer's chased with dogs, the deer just runs 20 miles outside of the county, never come back again. But that's just not true. I mean, a lot of times when we run a deer, it'll be back where we jumped it in 30 minutes, maybe a few hours at the most. I mean, a lot of times we'll hunt a block, and the next night I'll go riding through the block, and the buck that we saw yesterday is in the field that night just standing there eating beans. I mean, there's not much of an effect on it. And that might be just because there's a lot of dog hunting around here and the deer become accustomed to it. But you would think that would show in the studies. And the studies that have been done and researched, like a deer's movement after being chased by dogs, shows that the deer return from where they were jumped, return to their home range most of the time within 24 hours. I think there was three or four studies that talked about that. The longest that a deer stayed away from its home range after being chased by dogs was 7 days. So, I mean, everything that's out there suggests that deer return back from where they were jumped within a very short period of time. And then the last issue that I talked about was just deer reproduction. There's nothing more beautiful than a spotted fawn walking through a field. And if dogs had any kind of substantial effect on deer's reproduction rate, then that would be a very good reason to stop dog hunting. So luckily there's been a study done on this. Only one that I found specifically related to dog hunting and white-tailed deer. So in this study, they had a 2,000-acre enclosure full of deer, and they split them up. They ran half of the does while they were pregnant with dogs, and the other half of the does that were pregnant, they didn't run. They kept them as a control, and they wanted to see what dog running, what kind of effect that had on the deer's reproduction rate. And there was no difference between the control group and the group that was ran by dogs. So, I mean, that's only one study. You know, it's not a whole lot of evidence, but at least there's one study out there that shows that dogs repeatedly chasing does that are already pregnant has no effect on the reproduction rate. And those were really those three issues are the main issues that I talked about in the book. And then you asked about the relationship between hunter and dog. See, many people think that dog hunters don't really care about the dogs. It's just a tool. But from my experience, most of the people treat them like family, especially my dad. My dad has raised dogs since he was in his early 20s. He has about 10 right now at the house, and he treats them like family. You know, he raises them from a puppy, and then sometimes he'll trade or sell one, but a lot of times he keeps them until they get old enough and they can't run, and then they just retire and stay at the house and relax for the rest of their time. Like we have one dog named Rosie who I've hunted with since I was 8 or 9 years old. I can remember hunting with that dog a long time ago, and she hasn't been out on a hunt for the last 3 or 4 years, but she's just too old to do it now. But we would never get rid of a dog like that. You know, it just means too much to us. She's basically a family member. So she's in retirement. And I think most of the dog hunters that I know, if not all of them, treat their dogs in the same way my dad does. Just like family. Yeah.
All right. I got you. So again, it's in the title and it's running through this whole book. The idea of this type of hunting is a tradition, right? And it seems that's kind of the underlying premise of what your whole argument is, hey, this is a tradition. So why is it so important that it's a tradition? Because surely, you know, all traditions aren't kept or shouldn't always be kept. So why is this a tradition that should be kept? Why is it so important that it is a tradition?
Well, it's important that it's labeled as a tradition because it's not something that's new. It's not a modern style of hunting that was just created. People have been hunting with dogs in Virginia, at least, since the 1700s. And people have been hunting the way we hunt dogs today since the early 1900s. It's something that's been passed on from generation to generation. And that's why I call it a tradition, and that's why I think it's important to consider it as a tradition. But there's always, I don't think just because it's a tradition, it should stay. You know, I don't think that all traditions should be maintained just because they're traditions. Obviously, there are bad traditions out there. There are good traditions. We could probably give 100 different examples of bad traditions that probably need to go away or have in the past. But I think dog hunting is a good tradition, and I think it should stay. You know what I mean? That's what I touch on in the book, throughout the book. The objections that people have against it, I think, either arise because they don't completely understand dog hunting, or they're just not being charitable. You know, they haven't done the research, or they haven't gone out there and experienced it enough to get a full understanding of the complexities. So I think it's a good tradition. I think it's an ethical way of deer hunting. I think it's fair chase. I think the property right concerns that people have can be worked out by communication and us hunters coming together as hunters, not just... See, that's the problem with the dog hunting debate. We split hunters in these 9 states that still allow it. You have steel hunters on one side and dog hunters on one side. We should all be hunters. You know, we're all hunters. We should be working together. And I think it's possible to maintain dog hunting in today's world. It's practical. It's ethical. It's fair chase. And if we communicate and work together, we can preserve it for my kids, my grandkids, future to come.
Right. And again, knowing you, I know what type of person you are. So this is my favorite part of the book, is when I read this quote, because it reminded, it highlighted who you were as a person. And you're talking about people who disagree with you or may not understand your points when it comes to hunting. And you say, rather than, you know, trying to convince them or persuade them or whatever, you say, I want to take them hunting. Now, when I wrote it in my notes, that kind of sounds like a threat, but that's not how you meant it in the book. It came across in a really good way. What do you mean by that, and why do you think that way?
I mean, if anybody wants to go hunting, I'm more than willing to take you dog hunting. If you've never done it and you still have an opinion about deer hunting with dogs, a strong opinion, you think it should be outlawed, I think you should go dog hunting. I think you should experience it for yourself. Know what it is that you don't want to happen anymore. Know what it is that you don't want my kids to be able to practice and my grandkids to be able to see. And if you want to go hunting, I'm more than happy to take you hunting and show you the good side of dog hunting. Many people out there who have never hunted with a club but live around them have probably had some bad experiences. But there's a lot of good clubs out there. There's a lot of good dog hunters out there, and I think I'm one of them. I'm more than happy to take anybody hunting who wants to go and learn more about it.
So I'll leave you with the last word, as we always do. If there's anything you want to add, feel free to do so, and tell people where you can buy this book. And apparently, if they want to go hunting with you, how do they arrange that?
So you can find the book on Amazon, Deer Hunting with Hounds, A Southern Tradition. Or if you can find me, if you know me or know how to get in touch with me, I hate to leave my phone number on the podcast. I'm not going to do that. But if you know somebody who knows me, get them to get in touch with me. I can give you a book in person. It's a little cheaper that way. So if you want to get one in person, I'd be more than happy to set that up. And if you ever want to go hunting, just let me know.
Well, thank you for joining us. Again, this is Austin Tomlin with his book, Deer Hunting with Hounds, A Southern Tradition. Go buy it. It's a really quick read. And that concludes this episode of the Campbell Law Reporter podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Brian.
This is the Campbell Law Reporter.
Thank you for listening to the Campbell Law Reporter podcast. We look forward to you joining us every other Wednesday at 7 a.m. for a new episode, which can be accessed through your preferred podcasting listening platform.
This is the Campbell Law Reporter.